There's one towards the goal. That's going to be blocked by Travis Ridgen.
Well, this is more like it.
This is Slang in the Biscuit. Here's Travis Ridgen and Dave Wheeler.
Early and often. We're going.
Happy birthday to Mom. Happy birthday to Mom. Happy birthday, Mama Ridgen. Happy birthday to Mom. Congratulations. You pulled off a successful ruse on your mother. You surprised her. I was lucky enough to see her this past week. You done good, sir.
Yeah, I love seeing my mom. My mom is honestly one of the greatest moms in the world. She does her best. And I was just very happy to spend some time with her yesterday and the day before. And then also to see you. So we get to come back in studio and record our show.
Yeah, it worked out great. You had a surprise visit to the WPG. We love it.
Absolutely. Well, Winnipeg. Welcome to Winnipeg. I got a couple notes here for the city of Winnipeg because I haven't done a Winnipeg intro in a while. You ready for this one?
Ready.
Once thought to be the coldest city in the world by European explorers, it is the curling capital of Canada. Most Slurpees drank per capita in the world. Founded by the Selkirk settlers of 1812, they met at the meeting of the Red and the Assiniboine River at the Forks. Crime is out of control. Photo radar is the only industry here, but the people are still friendly. This is Winnipeg.
Welcome. I like it. I like it. Actually, funny enough, we're still the butt of a joke every time it gets into late January, early February, and it dips down to like minus 45 and below with the wind chill. They always go, it's actually warmer on Mars right now, and they're not wrong. There has been times where Mars has actually been warmer than Winnipeg.
I saw an article a while ago that Winnipeg was thought to be the coldest city in the world until they discovered Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a few places in Siberia. I'm pretty sure the North Pole and the South Pole could probably rival some of our coldest days. But yeah, as far as from what I understand, I may be wrong in this. Someone can fact check me on this down in the comments. But it is the largest metropolitan city that goes through the biggest temperature influx from summer to winter. We will get into the low 30s in centigrade and down to minus 40. So we're talking like over 70 degree shift between the seasons.
I know the weather gets a little bit out of control sometimes, but I think the worst part about the prairies, if there was one worst thing, it's just how dry it is. Like from Calgary all the way probably into about Thunder Bay, the Great Lakes kind of make things a little bit more humid, but it's just so dry that my scalp burns, like my face, it kind of itches. Mm-hmm. You go back to Vancouver, it's like, oh.
The only good news about that is that in the wintertime, the dry cold is much easier to tolerate than it is a humid cold because, I mean, listen, where my folks are out in eastern Ontario, when you shovel in the wintertime, you can literally see the blue water in their snow. Where here, it's light and fluffy. It's light and fluffy every time.
A heart attack snow.
Exactly.
Well, the geezer's dropping dead.
Yeah. No, the weather out here is unbelievable. And another point on your Selkirk settlers, my ancestry, Miles MacDonnell, was actually him and his father, Spanish John MacDonnell, were the first to lead European settlers to the Red River Colony here in the Selkirk area.
Really?
Yeah.
What year was that?
Oh, boy. Early 1800s.
Was it you who told me that originally they wanted to settle Selkirk, Manitoba,
yeah,
as the main city in Manitoba, and then they decided, right, let's just go.
Well, the Forks made more sense for logistics, right? To be able to get things from the Hudson's Bay Company and whatnot, all the fur trading, it made more sense to be there because they could go north and they could go east or west from here down the Assiniboine. So it made more sense to do that rather than in Selkirk. So, yeah, if you look at the train line, it goes up, and then it's a hard 90-degree down towards Winnipeg.
You know, we've talked about this a couple times over the summer, but the men who went out to World War I, World War II, getting blown up in a ditch, I hope I come back and see my wife. That's awful. Don't get me wrong. But the men who went and mapped out the West, they mapped out all of Canada. They came across on boat, two-month expedition. I hope that I come back. I hope that I finish doing what I'm doing. You didn't eat for 2-3 days at a time. Maybe you're like the dude in Lake Louise who fell off a cliff. Philip Abbott dropped to his death, first ever death in Rocky Mountain climbing history in North America. His wife finds out a couple months later, hey, the dude's dead. He's gone. They didn't end a mountain after him. Mm-hmm. But you just hope that you came home to see your family. Like, it's just a crazy time.
It's a really bad consolation prize.
Is they in a mountain after you?
Yeah.
I feel like they would have wanted that, though.
Yeah. Actually, another member of my family, anyone out on the West Coast that goes by the Fraser Valley or the Fraser River or anything named after Fraser, he's directly in my bloodline as well. So I'm well equipped when it comes to explorers in my ancestry.
You know, apparently 10% of all people are related to Genghis Khan. They have his genetic chromosome.
Dude, he did so much pillaging back in the day. Like, he messed up the world bloodline for a long time.
He laid some brick.
Oh, did he ever.
Rubber to road.
Holy moly. Unbelievable. Like, legendary type stuff.
Yeah, I don't even know what he looked like. I know he's a character in a bunch of video games, but...
Yeah, I don't think everyone has a really good idea of what he looks like because, you know, not a lot of cameras back then. And the guy didn't have time to stop for a painting. But I think they have had it down pretty good in Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller. They had a Genghis Khan character in there. Whenever I think of Genghis Khan, that's the one I think of.
That's a great movie. Genghis, You gotta get your photo taken. You mean painting? I have a village to pillage.
Well, he listen. Remember when they have the Easter Island, the big Easter Island egghead in that movie?
No.
Or the rockhead? Hey, Dum Dum, you bring me gum gum?
Yeah.
I've stolen that line. That's what I call my Saint Bernard. I call her Dum Dum. Hey, Dum Dum, you have any gum gum?
I don't know if the wide angle will pick it up, but we got Dave's big 130-pound Saint Bernard. She weighs more than my chick back in Vancouver, but
she's a beauty and she snores logs, man. She saws logs every single night and keeps me up. It's unbelievable. But I love her.
Speaking of love, though, cheeseburger soup? No, tortilla soup, cheeseburger sliders. Your boy, Scotty Scheffler.
Man, listen, I'm not going to take anything away from him. He's the world number one for a reason, but he is the most boring golfer ever. Like, there's just, I would much rather see Phil Mickelson hit it into the pine straw and then make an incredible shot on the green, you know, with five holes left of the Masters than Scotty Scheffler. Fairway, green, two putt. Fairway, green, two putt. Fairway, green, one putt. It's just, he reminds me of KJ Choi. He's just a boring golfer. There's not a lot of excitement there, but two green jackets in 3 years, man. Good for him. He picked up $3.6 million. Shout out to Corey Connors from Listowel, Ontario. He was the top Canadian, tied for 38, seventh over par. My boy Tiger, he showed glimpses, and he made it interesting there for a little while, but I was really hoping that a guy like Colin Morikawa, I would have loved seeing win. Oberg from Sweden, he would have been a lot of fun. There's a few storylines in there that I really enjoyed. Rory McIlroy, I still want to see him get a green jacket.
He's
but,
looking pretty jacked.
Oh, yeah, man.
He's putting on some size.
Oh, yeah, is he ever. He's a big boy.
And
big
shoulders.
He needs the green jacket in order to get the Grand Slam. So, yeah, cheering for Roars. But, yeah, I'm telling you, man, the Masters, it's one of my favorite weeks of the entire year. It's the unofficial kickoff to summer for me here in Manitoba.
Well, you played hockey at a high level. Like, I'm sure you appreciate the minor details that go into making somebody good, right?
Well, listen, I'll tell you a quick story, and this will stay with golf. I can't remember if I've shared this. I do a lot of podcasts, so I can't remember where I've shared what. But
and he's been off the show twice. Well, no, one time. On, off,
on,
back off, on.
And back on, yeah. I was hosting a golf dinner once upon a time, and we were there was an award being given out to the most improved junior golfer of the year. And everyone thought I was going to go to this kid who improved his handicap over the summer from a 26 down to like an 8, which is incredible. But it ended up going to a kid who got his handicap down from a 3 to a 1. And the amount of fine-tuning you have to do in your game to get from a 3 handicap to a 1 handicap, it's very, very minute, simple changes. And when you get to that high of a level and that kind of really nitpicky stuff, then yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about Sense Arena later. I mean, it's guys like that really go that extra mile to figure out where are the chinks in the armor of my game.
One thing that I've found, like in all sports since, you know, turning pro with hockey, is that I know as a goaltender, like what amount of detail goes in, like you mentioned, to just make a couple chinks in the armor to try to get 1% better. And although I don't understand golf, really, I mean, as we've talked about, I suck. But I know that there are so many details like that in a Scotty Scheffler's game or a Rory McIlroy that I appreciate it. And I watch it, I'm like, okay, if I was of that mind frame, what type of details are they picking up on? What are they doing that maybe the average person wouldn't? And it just makes you appreciate it that much more. Like even my Muay Thai coach in Vancouver, he was saying, the stuff that makes you the best will get you 5 views on Instagram, but it's the stuff that actually works. The stuff that gets you 1 million views, it's just for clicks. It doesn't actually do anything.
Right.
But like that's where the money's made.
Well, look at it this way. You go to any local course anywhere, wherever you're living, wherever you are, you go to your local course and say you want to take on the pro, like the club pro. They will whip you up and down that golf course, okay? Those guys would have a hard time playing on the Mackenzie Tour in Canada and making a cut on a regular basis. The guys on the Mackenzie Tour would have a hard time making the Korn Ferry Tour. The guys on the Korn Ferry Tour have a hard time making the PGA Tour. There are guys that struggle to keep their PGA Tour card year after year, and there are guys that have a hard time making a cut every single time. So these guys that are making consecutive cuts week after week after week, if you want to put in perspective just how good they are, your local club pro will whip you up and down the course. Imagine what those guys would do to you.
I'm just thinking about this on the spot. Post-retirement idea. I haven't told Dave about this before, talking about this out loud. What if, like, when I'm done hockey, I started going around maybe touring with, like, let's say, like a golf pro, like a minor golf pro, a minor basketball, a minor football pro, and try to understand the intricacies and the details of their game and taking, okay, this is what I've learned in goaltending. What part of those mechanics actually apply to this, and trying to bring an average viewer in to appreciate those details.
I don't think it necessarily be the mechanics. It wouldn't be the athletic mechanics. It would be so more so the mindset. It would be more so the habits. It would be more so the love and the drive that you have. Those are the similarities that you'd find, but I don't think you'd find a lot of mechanics from one or the other side from just athleticism.
Well, I know from my perspective, any player that, you know, in, you know, the previous teams that I played for in the US or in Sweden, at any moment, there's probably like 100 different decisions that are going on through my head. Okay, where am I located in the crease? What is my depth? What does my posture look like so that I can stay mobile into the next save? Okay, what options does he have? What is he looking? What does his posture tell me that he's probably most likely going to do? What do the options have? Like, what options do his options have? And like all these thoughts. And I think, okay, well, the golf professionals have to be thinking the exact same thing. I would love to just get like a scan, like a forensics of that. I find that so fascinating.
Well, there's different types of golfers. There's some guys that are, you know, much like you, they're equipment nerds, where they want the best. They'll take out, they'll shave things down. They'll bring it into a metal worker, and they'll have the edge of their putter trimmed down a little bit, or they want their wraps underneath their grips a little bit fatter. I mean, if you look at Bryson DeChambeau is a great example. All of his clubs are really fat grips, even on his irons. And there's other guys that are just feel players. They just go out there and they give me a club. I'll feel it out. I'll be able to figure it out. There's guys that, like, again, Bryson DeChambeau, who wants to know what the humidity is in the air above, 40 feet. He wants to know which way the grass is bending. Is it towards him or is it against the grain of where he's trying to putt into? And there's other guys that just feel it out. And no one's kind of figured out the right chemistry on how to do it perfectly every time. And that's what I love about golf. Nobody's mastered it yet. A couple guys have come close, but nobody's done it yet.
I don't think there is a right answer, though. It's just a varying degree of yes. Like, it's not a math test of, okay, 2 + 2 = 4. It's like there is no right answer.
Right.
Right. Like, where is the right answer? There is none.
Mm-hmm. Some days you're feeling it. Some days you're not.
Even like in goaltending, like just the micro detail between a goal and a save, you know, like any of the games that I played in the last couple of years, like any goal you can take it and say, okay, if you move the blocker just over like an eighth of an inch and you change the posture just a quarter of a degree, saving a goal, literally that difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, to bring it back to the golfing, because we know, well, I mean, you would know more than I would just how detailed golf is and how intricate it is and like the coordination, the details you'd have to have. I'd be so fascinated by that. That's the inner nerd in me coming out though.
Well, there's an interesting term in golf that I learned, which is, you have to know where to miss. So ideally, you want to put it down the middle of the fairway every time. But if you're going to miss, if you have to miss in the right spots or else you're really screwing yourself over. So a lot of players will be like, I didn't hit that right, but it was a good miss and I can still recover from that rather than getting myself into double bogey territory. So I think hockey can be the same way. It's okay to make a mistake. It's just how are you recovering from it?
When my mom and I were having dinner last night at the Fort Garry Hotel, we were talking about like Scotty Scheffler, and specifically I told my mom, I was like, you know, he had tortilla soup and cheeseburger sliders for the Masters dinner last year. She's like, what? It's like, when the guy wins, he gets to pick the dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about the beef Wellington, the salmon tartare, cheeseburger sliders, tortilla soup. What a beauty.
Yeah, well, listen, Dustin Johnson was no different. I think he went with finger sandwiches and piggies and blankets. But yeah, I mean, Hideki Matsuyama won a few years ago and brought an incredible Japanese dish and had the chefs at Augusta cook it for him. Tiger's gone and done some pretty incredible meals over his 5 green jackets. And that's one thing I love about the Masters. Again, it's just, I know it's stuffy, and I mentioned it last week on the show, I know it's stuffy, and it's like, oh, the patrons and all that kind of stuff. But there's just something really cool about even the idea of being part of an elite club like that, where if you win once, you're welcome back every single year. And I love that. I think that's a really cool way to do it. You don't get a trophy, you get a jacket.
You get some cash, cold hard cash.
$3.6 million worth, yeah.
Not bad.
That's pretty good money.
Even, what was it, top 10? You got like $500,000, $400,000?
And don't forget, caddy makes 10% of that too. So Scheffler's caddy made $360,000 for 4 days of work.
It's for holding the bag.
Yeah.
They hiring.
Yeah, listen, man, that's a tough gig too. I mean, being a caddy, you have to not only know your math, you have to know your yardages, you have to know your player, you have to know their tendencies, their habits, you have to be able to talk them into good situations, talk them out of bad situations. Like it's like being a therapist on the field. It's true. It's like being a therapist on the course. I've had the pleasure of looping, as they call it, for a couple of pros here and there, and it's a lot of fun. To me, it's if I'm out on the golf course, I don't necessarily need to be swinging a club. I just love to be part of the process, and I absolutely love being a caddy.
We're gonna go golf in the summer.
Absolutely, totally down. Follow the rule. You make a bad shot, move it towards mine.
We'll work on it though.
Yeah, yeah.
You got married at the Fort Garry Hotel, though, right?
I sure did, man. I got a lot of fond memories of that hotel.
When did you get married to Candace?
We got married on June 23rd of 2012. So we're coming up on 12 years here, I guess. Yeah.
The day before my birthday.
Is it really?
Yeah, day before my birthday.
Yeah, I think I got another family member with an anniversary or a birthday around there somewhere. Anywho, yeah, we got married in the Assiniboine room on the main floor when you first walk in to the right, and then we had our reception across the bridge in the Fort Garry apartment on the seventh floor. One of those floors.
Fort Garry Place.
Yeah, the Fort Garry place, they've got a huge, massive ballroom. We had 450 people at our wedding. My wife really let me nerd out. I had Bobo Fett and a stormtrooper as our ushers. The mayor did the ceremony.
Who was that at the time? Sam Cates?
Sam Cates, yeah. Was he officiated the wedding. She allowed me to play the Indiana Jones theme song when her bridesmaids walked down the aisle. Her and I walked out to the throne room music from A New Hope, the Star Wars. I had bagpipes. All my groomsmen wore kilts. Oh, we had a blast, man. It was one of the best days of my life, and just because it was so much fun.
That does sound awesome.
It was great. I'd do it again if it wasn't so bloody expensive.
How much was it?
It was a lot.
Can you give us a ballpark?
It was a lot.
20? 50? 100?
It was a lot.
I heard the average wedding goes for about $80,000 at the Fort Garry.
We were just below average then. Yeah.
That's a lot of
shit. It's worth it, though. That girl's worth it. I'd do it again.
It's a lot of scratch.
That's a lot of money.
Beautiful place, though. Historic place.
It's iconic. It really is.
My mom was so happy, though, to be there. So if you're listening to the show and you missed last week's episode, I went home, surprise visit for my mom's 62nd birthday. And I treated her to a little staycation at the Fort Garry Hotel. And she really doesn't get a lot of these experiences. So my mom got to experience the Fort Garry Hotel. Like, you walk in the lobby, she's like, oh my God, this place is beautiful. The rooms were great. Actually, the rooms were okay. The beds were a little bit squeaky and maybe not the greatest sleep, especially you hear like the train yards.
Yeah, no, listen, you're not going there for the spacious appeal. You're not going there for the state-of-the-art plumbing. You're going there because it's an, you know, you're going there for the iconic feel and the marble floors and the wainscoting and all of the amazing finishing touches that they put on everything. The Palm Room, which has now been renamed, but it's just...
The Oval Room, they re-renovated it back to what it was in 1913. Mm-hmm. That might be one of the nicest places I've ever eaten a meal in.
It's really nice.
The Palliser is pretty awesome, the whole fireplace. Like, mm-hmm. It all has a whole nostalgia because, I mean, the Palliser was 1914, the Fort Garry Hotel in 1913, but... And I'll throw some video on the video version of the show. It is just an incredible place to have a meal. It feels like you're in 1911 again.
And the food's good.
It was outstanding.
Yeah.
I had this beef braised chuck. The server lady said, oh, it's been on our menu for 32 years. I'm like, hope I get a fresh one. But I could see why it was on the menu for 32 years. It was so damn good.
When I first moved to town, I lived in the apartment that I mentioned right behind. There's a 3-stack of apartments with a revolving restaurant at the top. And they don't do it anymore. They only do it on special occasions like Mother's Day and whatnot. But every Sunday, they used to have a brunch down in the lobby of that hotel. Mm-hmm. And it was the best.
The pea mill bacon was so good.
For $25, you go down there. It was an all-you-eat breakfast buffet on Sundays. And my God, I can't count the amount of dates that I brought down there on a Sunday morning so I could get them out after.
Mr. Wheeler, this is your 6th time this morning.
Yeah, well, hey, well, listen, it's that good. It's that good.
Brittany, weren't you a blonde? She was a brunette.
I thought she worked here. A lot of great memories, though. That's an amazing hotel, and I know you're working on a series of the old rail hotels, and I think that one's maybe not the crown jewel, but I think it's one of the unsung heroes of the line.
Absolutely, we'll touch on Spain a little bit because that will be the headliner for today. Is looking forward to playing in Spain this season. Some thoughts about it, but a couple of the post retirement ideas that I have had is obviously our show, the podcast, is my biggest post retirement baby for us to blossom and flourish once I'm done and the old body gives out. But another one is the travel vlog series. Like, I've been doing travel vlogs subconsciously for years playing professional hockey. Now I've just taken that to the Grand Railway Hotels of Canada, the history of over a century ago, to experience the grandeur, to experience the history, the stories, the fact that, like you said before, you're literally walking into a time machine. The Fort Garry Hotel, 110 years ago, there was dudes putting the trusses up on the 14th floor. And now fast forward 110 years later, my mom and I are having braised beef chuck roast for dinner in 2024. Like, it's just, it's cool. That series will roll out in the summer in July, by the way. So there's going to be a train video across Canada end of June, and then 8 Grand Railway Hotel videos documenting each Grand Railway Hotel for the entire month of July. So the vlog program will return to its regular scheduled hockey program for August and September, moving into the season for Spain. But this Grand Railway Hotel series is going to be my biggest endeavor into filmmaking and showing off what I can actually do, which it's kind of interesting because most of them are Fairmont hotels, and the Fairmont's starting to kind of realize, oh, like, this guy actually knows what he's doing. Actually, our corgi, Wally, Bella's corgi, we got reinvited back to the Palliser because they love the video of Wally. They're like, we'd love to have him back to get some more video. Not me, the dog.
Of course.
The official Palliser pup.
Listen, the dog will get you in more places than not. I remember when my wife and I were traveling through the Cancun airport, all those scary dudes with the machine guns, oh, they throw those things back right away. Oh, my God, look at the size of this dog. And big hugs. We could have brought anything through there. Dogs, if you got a cute dog, you can get away with almost anything.
See this right here? See this right here? You don't even notice I'm doing right over here. Don't look over here.
Exactly. Actually, there's a great, this has been going online for a long time, but these guys decided to do a YouTube video to see how many places they could get in by carrying a ladder. the amount of backstage access they got to places. If they go up and say, hey, yeah, I've got a thing in the back. And they go, oh, yeah, you got a ladder. Yeah, yeah, you must be a maintenance guy. Go ahead. And whew, right through.
You remind me of Shrek 2. You know when Shrek walks into the fairy godmother's castle and, oh, can I talk to fairy godmother? She's not in. She orders some food. We're here with the union. The union?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel oppressed and underappreciated? We don't even have dental. Go right in. You feel like you're underpaid? Yes.
This will make you happy. I've heard rumors that Mike Myers is putting pen to paper for another Shrek movie.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And we're getting another Happy Gilmore movie. Oh, this is great.
Oof. You know, not to go back too much to the golf stuff, but the crowd they had at the Masters, it literally reminded me of Happy Gilmore when he strokes the ball. Come on, get off your ass. And he's stroking the club.
Oh, yeah. The Masters is, like I said, it's very stuffy. It's a sharp contrast from the Waste Management Phoenix Open that happens in Arizona, where you've got the stadium hole where you've got, you know, 15,000 people throwing beer cups down if you miss the green. Like, it's what a sharp contrast. And I love the antithesis of one to the other.
That's a great transition because, you know, I'm going from getting beer cans thrown at me playing in North America to in Spain where, in all reality, I'll probably be the king of Spain this season by the time it's all said and done.
I hope you are, man.
But first, we got to take a word for today's presenting sponsor, the team at Sense Arena. Sense Arena is incredible. Sense Arena is virtual reality hockey training. They are changing the game. They're making it affordable, accessible in ways it's never, ever been done before. Gals and girls alike, over 100 drills, training programs made by real professional coaches and players. And right now, you can support the show and pick up Sense Arena for $50 off your annual membership. You go to the link in the video description at NHL Hockey, SenseArena.com. It'll be a link in the video description. Click on that link. Use the code BISKIT. BIZKIT will get you $50 off your annual subscription. And Sense Arena, if you are in downtown Toronto, downtown Montreal, you can't afford $500-$600 an hour for ice. I was telling Belle about that the other day. She couldn't understand. She's like, why is ice so expensive? That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Sense Arena, great way to get those reps in. Stay sharp, stay in the game, stay active. Or maybe you're in the middle of rural Saskatchewan, rural New Brunswick. You have no idea how to get access to ice. Boom, Sense Arena, perfect solution. And thanks to the team at Sense Arena for sponsoring the show again.
Absolutely. Yeah, hockey's always been a... It's not exactly a poor man's sport. I mean, it's not like you can wrap a whole bunch of plastic bags together and go out and kick a ball around with your friends in a yard somewhere or just a patch of grass. It is not a cheap sport to play.
I know we talked about this about a year and a bit ago, but when I played AAA hockey, I remember my mom cutting that check for $5,000 for the season. Now it's the same hockey as $10,000-$15,000. And I asked my mom all the time, like, would you have been able to afford it? She's like, no, you've been playing soccer or chess.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very fortunate to have played when I did because my mom was able to afford it. And yeah, to anybody else who can't afford it, you're lucky.
Well, and it's a good investment too. I mean, it's paying dividends now with hockey as the career, and you wouldn't have had that had she not made that initial investment. So good on you, mama.
Well, that's why I took my mom for the staycation, to appreciate her sacrifices and everything she's done for me.
That's amazing.
So, but I am looking forward to the season in Spain. I think you'd probably be more excited than I have been for Spain. Now, for the record, for my team watching Millennia, I am very excited. But this man, I've never seen a man so excited for somebody else for the upcoming hockey season as Dave Wheeler.
I'm excited. My wife and I have been looking for an excuse to get over to that neck of the woods. And if it has to be Spain, I'm totally okay with that. We're already kind of toying with the idea. We just got to make sure you get over there and whatnot. We're not booking anything yet. We know what your track record is when it comes to staying in markets for a period of time.
Remember the guy, one of the guys that I played for this year, he's saying on one of our Zoom calls, hey, when you coming down? You're like, yeah, soon. I'm like, God, he's going to gas me soon. Don't book any flights, Dave.
Yeah, no, there was a certain team that said they wanted to fly us down and have us do a puck drop and everything, and that would have been great. But no, listen, just to be able to live vicariously through you and get to flex that Spanish muscle and the food and, oh, my God, the sights and the sounds. I'm jealous. I'm extremely jealous. If I had a chance to go and do what you were doing, I would do it in a heartbeat.
I don't think I've ever asked you this, like, off the show or on the show, but... what was my first video you ever saw? Because obviously we went from, I was watching your radio show, listening to your radio show in high school. But at some point, I remember you popping up my YouTube dashboard for like recent subscribers when you were doing content for your previous radio station gig. And it said, oh, Dave Wheeler subscribed. So do you remember what video you saw?
Yeah, well, I think I started subscribing when you were over in Sweden. But there were just things popping up in my algorithm because of the amount of hockey that I watched. So it was Trav for Oilers and your pitch to try and get, you know, a tryout with them. And so I had been seeing the videos pop up. But when you really started having a storyline and a narrative as far as like, hey, I'm with the team, I'm playing. It was when you, I think it was your first season in Sweden is when I was first like, all right, this is going to be the weekly watch.
Yeah, those were some good times.
Yeah.
I miss Sweden a lot, but I'm excited. I'm more excited for Spain. And I'll tell you why. first off, like the games are going to be streamed live on YouTube. So for anybody concerned going from, you know, my previous teams were, oh, we could watch the games for free on YouTube. Well, guess what? You can watch them for free in Spain. Just check the time change. See how that converts wherever you're living. You can watch the games for free on YouTube. And to be honest with you, I would say across the board, the stream quality is significantly higher in Spain than it was for any of the U.S. teams. Like some of the U.S. teams, they had really good camera quality because we talked about the AHL teams. They just up and left, like the U.S. military in Afghanistan. Oh, see you later.
Right.
We got some great cameras. And then other teams, they film with an iPhone 6 and a potato gun. So it's going to be very consistent and very sharp on a Spanish broadcast. Maybe not as many fans as there are in the U.S., but similar to the Sweden situation, it's going to be great to try to get some morale in the community and get people coming to the rink. And with the opportunities that I'm going to have over there, because if you look on the elite prospects for all the Spanish teams, there's almost no imports. So the fact that I'm going over there as one of maybe five or six Canadians in the entire league, like I have the potential to do some incredibly good things for my community, to do some incredible things for my team, both on and off the ice. And honestly, I could become the king of Spain. All the mamacitas would be calling me Big Papi. Big Papi's in net tonight.
Could happen.
Was that a little bit too much?
No, it could happen. Absolutely. Yeah, man. Listen, I think you're going over there with a head full of steam, and I love it because I don't think you're going to be disappointed. Everything that I've read about Spain. John Rahm, Masters champion last year, is from Spain.
People say
Spain.
I look like John Rahm, by the way.
Really?
Like separated at birth.
He's short and a little thicker. You're tall and lanky, but maybe in the beard?
He's not very good looking, so it is concerning.
You know how much money he makes?
He makes a lot of cash.
He signed with the LIV Golf League for like $500 million, so... As Kid Rock said, I used to be an ugly dude. Now I'm a rich rock star, and I am handsome AF.
Drink specials of winners to New York City and $700 dinners.
Exactly.
All the meetings with top record execs. I love Kid Rock.
Bingo. It's amazing how a guy's rating will go up a few notches if he's got a thick bank account. Actually, a great story from back in the Jets 1.0 days. St. Louis Blues were in town, or maybe the Detroit Red Wings, and a bunch of the guys were out after, and this girl goes up. She goes, "Excuse me, I hate to bother you, but are you Brett Hall?" And he goes, "Yes, I am." She goes, "So nice to meet you. It's weird. I thought you'd be taller." And he goes, "Oh, did you want me to stand on my wallet?" It's a good line.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
He did well for himself, too.
Yeah, he did okay. Considering I'll be honest with you, his entry into the league, he came in, he was with the Flames. He came in overweight. I'm Brett Hall's, or I'm Bobby Hull's son. You know, I'm the talk of the... He thought he was God's gift to hockey. And somebody had to smack him upside the head and say, "Listen, get in shape or you're not going to be in this league very long." And he did. And boy, oh boy, between the Stars, the Red Wings, and the Blues, he put a lot of rubber in the net.
I think one of the greatest stories of Brett Hall that I ever heard was in the 2002 conference final, Wings versus Avalanche. Sean Avery's a rookie. And I guess him and Joe Sakic were going at it. They're on the bench. And then Avery gets up to go say something to Sakic. He's like, "Hey, Sakic." And Brett's like, "You don't speak to Mr. Sakic." Like,
right.
What a power move. Do not speak to Mr. Sakic that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they're still like the untouchables. Like that guy, I mentioned him on the show before, the guy that caught Gretzky with his head down coming across the blue line. He played one game in the NHL and he was never heard from again. Went down and played the rest of his time in the minors. You don't mess with the guys who make you the big money.
You know, Wayne's brother played for the Danbury Trashers, Brent Gretzky.
Did he really?
True story.
I remember when they called him up to play for Tampa so they could have both Gretzkys on the ice.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think he's got one game to his NHL credit.
They hold the NHL record for most points by two brothers.
That's right.
Wayne had 3,000. Brent had 3.
That's right. Yeah. Mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing to me how close Gretzky was to all of those records. Like, I mean, he was just a stone's throw away from 900 goals. He was a stone's throw away from 2,000 assists. It's just, it's incredible that it's unfortunate, I should say, that his body wasn't able to hold up for another couple seasons so he could have hit those benchmarks. But that hit that he took in the Canada Cup, that Suter put him down at the end boards, he was just never right after that.
Ovi's going to catch the record, though, probably.
This is the best thing they could do with Alex Ovechkin. And I've thought about this. He's not the guy that's going to put 25 minutes on the sheet anymore. He just can't. He's too old. He's showing it literally in his hair. But if they can keep him around and keep him to 8 to 10 minutes a game, put him on the power play, put him in that power spot on his off wing where he loves firing nets from the shots from the top of the circle, he can get there within two seasons.
Well, he's only, what, 50 away?
Yeah, he's inside of there. Yeah. I think two more seasons he could get it done.
I think he will. So I have two slight dilemmas in Spain. Number one, I'm curious. I don't know if you would know, but I'm curious to the viewers listening. What is the humidity like? Is it more like a Vancouver or a Winnipeg? Because I do love my nice humid climates in Vancouver. I don't necessarily like come back to Winnipeg because I'll be talking about like I get really dry and itchy. And then also, I need to find a barber in Spain. And I was talking to my guy here in Vancouver, and he was saying, this is what you do if you want to find a barber when you go to a new place. You go into any barber shop, you look for the guy with the worst haircut, because he's probably getting cut by the guy who's got the worst haircutting abilities in the shop, because he has the best abilities. And you ask, who cuts your hair? Okay, don't go with that guy. And then kind of go down the line and then find your barber.
Okay.
So that was my strategy.
That's not bad. I would probably look for some place that maybe has an English-speaking barber. That would probably help. At least you could tell him what you want or show him a picture and just say, por favor, you know, and point at the top of your head. Really, that's your biggest worry as a barber?
Well, I got to play.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Actually.
No, but well, I mean, like, outside of playing, I mean, as far as integrating yourself into that country and the language, and there's going to be a lot of things that you're going to have to learn and relearn. But really, barber?
I'm pretty adaptable. Like, I learned in Sweden really quick to adapt to the culture, to adapt to how the people are, to adapt to their mannerisms, learning the language. If I can't figure out something, because they're not as English fluent as Sweden or Norway, just fire it up in Google Translator, show that you care, put an effort in, the people will appreciate it. I'm definitely worried about making sure that I'm ready for the start of the season. I'm not going to be ready, but to make sure that everything is right and tight and in running order. I was talking to my agent the other day, and the prediction or the expectation that I would have is that we have, I think, a 25-game schedule. So I'm probably, assuming I perform the way that I believe I can, probably 15 to 20 starts, getting a majority of the starts, especially like if they're putting money in for me as an import, they're going to try to get their money's worth. Because if they don't, it's just wasted. So to deliver on that and play well and get us to at least 500, considering last season, not many wins. My agent's sending a couple other defensemen that he works with as well. So we're going to have a little bit better roster. And I think we're going to be very successful. 4 of the 9 teams make the playoffs. So we're going to go on a run and win the Spanish Liga.
Good for you, man. I love it. If you're not going in with that attitude, then you're not going in with the right attitude. So I think I think that's the right one to go in on.
We talked about this last week too. Like, I have questions just like the viewers have questions, the same way that you have questions is, what is the hockey like? What is the rink like? What's the team like? What's the league like? What's the skill level like? Like, what's the day-to-day life? What's the actual life of living in Spain while playing hockey like? Your questions are my questions, is everybody else's questions, and I can't wait to answer them in video format in the vlog and then in audio version, in audio format when we coordinate our time changes and get the show in.
And you're reporting in mid to late October. Am I accurate on that?
Beginning of October, I believe. Beginning of October, end of September, in that ballpark.
Okay.
But I'm excited.
I'm assuming there's not much of a training camp. It's just kind of a couple extra cuts here and there and a couple extra movements in the first few days, and then away you go.
Yeah, usually when teams pay for the international transfer fee, the visa, all that paperwork, if they're putting the money in, you're not going anywhere.
Hmm.
It's a lot of money to invest. Right, and if guys don't show up, they'll put you on an international IIHF suspension, which it will basically ruin your European hockey career. So guys are going to show up, and then for the team to just get rid of you doesn't really make sense when they're putting in that kind of money, because it's not like in the North American leagues where you can just trade somebody. Oh, I get some retained value back. Like, you lose everything for nothing if you get rid of somebody. So
wait, do you know what your practice schedule is like?
Like 4 days a week, a little bit of travel as well. It's not going to be as intense as last season or I guess this season, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited. One thing that I did want to touch on really quickly though is, to come back to the whole like golf talk that we had about like appreciating the details of the pros, like people made their own decision if they want to respect like what I'm doing, what any other pro does. I mean, you have how many armchair coaches that are like, this guy sucks, he doesn't know what he's doing, because they don't have the actual fundamentals to understand what's going on. I can try to paint the picture for you. Like, I mean, I know we talk on a very regular basis about the day-to-day grind, right? The summer training schedule, the travel schedule for actually going to games, the day-to-day mental aspect of, okay, like I'm competing against not just my own goalie partners, not against the other goalies in the league, but my own team, the players, because everybody's an asset. I'm trying to outcompete everybody for dollars and for playing time and for value. And ultimately, like, you decide if you want to respect that or not, but I can try to give you the tools to try to understand that, because it is such a difficult thing, especially the management side, the business side of going through the day-to-day stuff. But, I like to tell this to, some women I've dated that don't like to comply with my standards. Hey, adversity isn't for everybody.
I've got a question for you, but I know we got to squeeze in another sponsor here before I do so, but it has to do with, you remember the old Nintendo hockey where you pick the skinny guy, the fat guy, or the medium guy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's based on that, but let's get the sponsor in first.
Manscaped.com, the team at Manscaped, they have 2 awesome products you're going to want to pick up from this podcast. The Lawnmower 5 for all your below-the-belt grooming, 90 minutes of battery life, water-resistant, all your below-the-belt stuff for date night. Get ready to go with the Manscaped Lawnmower 5. And then my favorite product is what I've been using for almost 2 years now, is the Beard Hedger. 20 different lengths. You can dial in from a half millimeter all the way to 20. 60-minute battery life. The Beard Hedger is here to perform and get you tapered and faded in, just like my beard is. Go to the link in the video description, manscaped.com. Use the code BIZKIT, BIZKIT. 20% off and free shipping only from the team at manscaped.com. And thank you to sponsoring the show again, as they do every single week.
Okay. You know when you're playing NHL, EA Sports, NHL Hockey, pick whatever one you want, and you can design your own player, right? And you can pick, are you going to be
a faster skater? Are you going to be more defensive minded? Are you going to be more offensive minded? When it comes to your actual real life stats and abilities, if you could take 2 inches off your 6 foot five frame, where would you put those attribute points?
Third leg.
No, no. Where would you put those attributes in your game?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because as time has gone on, I've kind of realized that as awesome as it is to be 6 foot five, and I've definitely benefited the perks of extending my career and getting more benefits of the Delta than maybe a shorter guy. I have started to break down in the last couple of years because, I mean, like your big dog or a Great Dane, they're not meant to last usually. But
lost my Great Dane at 6 and a half, man, broke my heart. She was supposed to be a coffee table, and now we got a St. Bernard instead.
Also, shout out goalie coach Bill in Detroit. He had to put down his Great Dane, I think about a year ago. So
heartbreaking,
shout out goalie
man.
Coach Bill. Love you, miss you, man. Hope you're well. But if I could shrink down like 6 foot three, I think. And are we talking about putting 2 inches anywhere else?
No, I mean, like, you take away the height because obviously that's an advantage when you're goaltending. We've seen goaltenders, you know, like taking away the Dominic Hasek's of the world. We've seen, you know, the big guys in Tampa and whatnot who are just huge and they cover a lot of the net. But if you could take those 2 inches off, still remain 6 foot three, where would you put improvements into your game? Would it be quickness? Would it be awareness? Would it be puck handling?
No, my puck handling is great. I would love to put it in speed because being a bigger guy, you don't have as much access to speed. I am pretty fast for a big guy, though, in all honesty. I would love to put it, though, in mobility-wise because I find there's a lot of times where I max out my range and I can't really go any further because, you know, my limbs are so long. My legs are so long. My arms are so long. All the torsion is getting dispersed right in the middle of it. So I don't have that same mobility that other guys would have. But if I was downgraded to 6 foot three, I'd already have more mobility. So to add more on top of it would make me really, really elite. Mm. But, yeah, that's probably my answer.
Okay. But you would say the stronger parts of your game are your puck handling and your skating?
Best parts of my game, play reading, the ability to read and assess the play live on the fly in real time. My puck handling is elite. I would honestly say I'm probably the best puck handler in the FPHL, or at least was. Great locker room guy, too. I know this is off the ice, but it is so beneficial to have a guy that is a good room guy. I mean, you know, playing hockey, you have a guy that's positive, cheering the boys up. It's so awesome. As opposed to you have the guy that's all negative down in the dumps. He's scratched. He's shit talking everybody while you're at home watching the game. Like that is horrible. So anybody that I've played with knows I'm an incredible room guy. So that's definitely an attribute that I have. And just honestly, just fun to be around. I'm great for the morale. I had a job at a hockey rink one time. I don't know if I told you this. I worked there for 8 months. And about 6 months in, the boss comes, he says, "Hey, Rich, come over here." I said, "What's up, boss?" He said, "I would fire your ass. I would have fired your ass about 3 months ago. But you're so damn good for the morale. You keep everything happy. Everybody's happy around you. Everybody's good. When you're not working, it's a little bit more depressing. So just keep doing that. You don't do a very good job of the actual work, but just keep being good for the morale."
Nobody likes having a cancer in the hallways, man. And it goes from industry to industry. If you can be good in the hallways and people like being around you, you're not going to wear out your welcome as quickly, that's for sure.
What do you think the worst, most cancerous locker room you've ever played in is?
Oh, man, I'll be honest with you. I'm so far removed from playing. I could tell you more about some of the radio buildings that I've been in, some of the people I've encountered there. But it's they're getting easier and easier to spot. And I think in your career, they'll get easier and easier to spot when you get into a locker room. And you almost have to have, no different than a baseball team, you got to have a first baseman, second baseman, third baseman. You have to have people that play positions in the locker room. You have to have certain people who are just the mutes. They come in and they do their job. There are other people that are going to be loud. Some people are going to be funny. Some people are going to do this. You need X, Y, and Z characters in your locker room in order for it to be a successful one.
I totally agree. Different cogs to the machine. I think leave teams out of it?
I would leave teams out of it.
I think the worst locker room I've ever been a part of, this locker room is so cancerous. So I don't have a vehicle. So like when I'm there for the season or with the team, other guys would drive and carpool. And I remember specifically, and I'm very good at sussing guys out. Within about 2 minutes, I have an assessment. I know exactly what this guy's all about, what I can, what I can't say, and just a general energy vibe and if I'm going to want to be around them. And with this team, I'd be driving to and from practice with different guys every single day. And I remember if I was going with player A and B to practice, they'd be shit-talking our starting goalie. They'd be shit-talking other guys on the team. And I'd just be sitting in the back of the vehicle. I'm making notes. I'm observing. I'm not saying anything because it's none of my business. But then later when I go home, from practice, players C and D would be shit-talking guys M and N. And I'm thinking to myself, does everybody just shit-talk each other? Right? And obviously being a goaltender, I appreciate what goalies do more than anybody else. But the fact that you're shit-talking your starting goalie, when the guy just put up 50 saves the other night, you have 3 goals and 50 shots. Oh, he should have had this one. Oh, he sucked. Bro, our defense sucks. You guys are terrible. That's why you had 50 shots. Don't shit talk your goalie. Shit talk anybody else. But then I just think, what are you guys saying about me behind my back when I'm not around?
Right.
You know, like, that was such a poor locker room environment. I was a little bit upset to not finish the season like we talked about, but what's up, Mike?
We would have loved your voice on the show.
Word. Sorry, Orson.
I would have loved to finish the season. I know we've talked about it on and off the show, but to be away from that energy and that environment was like such a the second I was gone. I'm like, oh, I don't have to listen to this guy bitch and complain about everybody every single day. Everybody's just so negative and shit-talking each other. It's the worst.
Well, listen, guys will turn on each other in the locker room a lot quicker when you're losing, for sure. When you're winning, things are a lot easier to smooth out, that's for sure.
I disagree with the level I played at. Whether you're winning or losing, everybody's shit-talking each other. Most guys are shit-talking each other. Most guys are trying to make themselves appear better than one another. But I look at it with a different mentality. If I'm not playing, guys are going to expect me to shit-talk our starting goalie, to shit-talk everybody else. As opposed to, if I'm a good teammate, I'm hyping them up. You know, way to go, Babs. Way to go, Shep. Great save. You played great, man. I'm, what do you need? You need more mustard? Okay, I got you a bottle of mustard. You need some water? Whatever you need, I got you. Guys will say, wow, Trav's a good teammate. Trav cares. Trav cares about our starting goalie. Cares about Sheps, about Babs, whatever, about Ricky, whatever. So when he goes in, we got to support him because he's a really good teammate. So the more I give, the more I get. It's a mutually beneficial relationship, as opposed to if they see me shit talk and be negative all the time. Nobody wants to play for me.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Anything else we got to touch on here?
That's it. I think that's the episode for today. So if you are new to the show, hit the subscribe button on YouTube. If you're on Apple or Spotify, leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think. Join the Patreon page, by the way. $5 a month, you get access to deleted episodes that have never been to the public eye, as well as some untold stories from my previous employers and previous teams. You get access to the trading cards from Motor City, Sweden, Varber, you name it.
And a duck.
Oh, yeah, a duck. Thank you for the reminder. Shout out to my billet family in Watertown, Joe and Ziva. They got me this little duck. And I put it in my locker, like my stall this season. They said, can you please get the duck on the podcast? Here is the duck. So thank you very much, guys. But join the Patreon page, $5 a month to support the show, keep things humming. And we do new episode every single Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern in downtown Toronto outside of the CN Tower, 10 in the Prairies, Winnipeg, and Saskatoon. I figured out we're both in the same time zone. 9 a.m. in the Bow Valley and the Bow Falls of Calgary and the foothills of Alberta, and 8 a.m. on the Pacific Northwest of downtown Vancouver. This is Slinging the Biscuit. I'm Travis Ridgen. That's Dave Wheeler. Thanks for listening. See you next week.